Welcome to the Love, Sex and Intimacy podcast for women who want to experience intimate relationships and sex that are pleasurable and passionate, happy, thriving and deeply fulfilling. With my very special guest experts guiding lights and pioneers in their specialist areas, we'll be breaking down the myths, exploring the difficult stuff, the good stuff and seeing what's possible for love, sex and intimacy at this time of rapid change. In these candid and intimate conversations, I'll be bringing you the best of sex and relationship education, full of practical ways to support and inspire change in your intimate life. I'm your host, Sarah Rosebright. Whether you're curious about what's possible or you're already committed to exploring, I'm so happy you are here. Hello, and before we dive into the conversation today, I'd love to let you know that I've written an ebook called How Relaxed Lovemaking Can Transform Your Sex Life. One of my passions is to support people to move beyond the goal-based pleasure that most of us learn and to explore how we can slow down and drop into deep intimacy, deep presence, and deep pleasure together. So go to my website, sararosebright.co.uk, sign up to my newsletter and you can download your copy and let me know how you find it. I'd really love to hear. And whether you're in a partnership, whether you're solo dating, there is something in it for everyone. So introducing today's conversation with Annabelle Viscara, embodiment mentor and womb shaman, and what a powerful conversation it is. We explored what full spectrum feminine embodiment looks like. We explored why the journey to your power is a descent into the body. She shares her deep knowledge of womb intelligence and what that is, how to cultivate a relationship with your womb, the power of ancestral healing, your soul's journey, and so much more. Oh, and we also talked about one of my favorite topics, the gene keys. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to this episode today. I'm really delighted and excited to be joined by Annabelle Viscara. Welcome, Annabelle.
Hello. Thank you for the invitation. I'm really, really happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I'll let Annabelle explain in a moment what you do in the world, but I saw you on a retreat with the Gene Keys, something we've spoken about on the podcast before, on the Venus sequence, and I just saw you there as a real radiant, vibrant representative of the feminine in terms of, but so grounded, and I was just like, I've got to reach out to this woman. So thank you so much for having a yes to this conversation.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. It's always beautiful to get those reflections. So thank you and for inviting me onto your platform. I'm very grateful. Thank
you. Beautiful. Well, I'd love you to introduce yourself to people listening who maybe haven't heard of you and your work, a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so this is always an interesting question, right? Because there's so many things to it. My name's Annabelle Viscara, and the core of my work is womb work, and then incorporating Gene Key wisdom, incorporating quantum physics, epigenetics, all these different modalities that I have myself used, learned, and that I find very helpful, and sort of, you know, bringing it into a nest of womb work, and mostly working with women to help the embodiment process of all of the different things that are out there, right? Because there's so many concepts and there's so many things that are out there, but until we're able to bring them into the body and actually absorb them and cultivate them, it really becomes more like we're on this constant chase for something else. So my aim is always to bring women back into their bodies, into their womb space, into their authority, and live out our amazing lives from there. So that's a little overview.
Fantastic. Well, there's lots of areas I'd love to dive in, but before we do that, I'd love to hear some of your journey and what brought you to doing this work. So whatever you'd love to share from your story.
Thank you for that question. So when I began my journey, officially my healing journey, right? Because we're born into this already with these agreements. When I began, it was through a big life crisis. And, that was through a divorce, bankruptcy. I used to have a real estate practice. So I was very in the world, making it happen, living the dream. But however, inside of me, I was very empty. I was a workaholic and I was a control freak. And I had all these things that just kind of kept me, they kept me from really feeling what was happening in my life. And it was more about the image of success, right? And so when all of that crumbled, I was able to go into an inquiry. And this actually came through my son because I had a 1-year-old at the time. And my question was, if what had been driving me was not the answer, which was the money, the cars, the house, the husband that's good on paper, all of these different things, if that wasn't success, what was? And I wanted to show my son what really is success. And so that question really took me on a journey of discovering that in me. What was that for me? So how would I do it differently this time? What was I going to teach him? Because for me, I grew up, I come from an immigrant parents. And so it was always like work hard, buy the house, save the money. These things that it was always materially based and never emotionally or spiritually centered. And so that was the great shift for me. And what I love about how my life has unfolded, and which I'm so grateful for, is that I didn't go into it looking to make a business out of it. I didn't go into it saying, oh, I'm going to learn these modalities and go teach them. To be honest with you, that I wasn't even thinking of that. It was more so, how can I find what is truly meaningful and valuable and teach that to my son, and bring that to my family? I'm really close to my family. So it was more so, how can I restore the love and the respect and and something that lasts in my home? And so it just evolved. After going through these different things, I went into a mystery school where the womb shamanism is, comes from. And it just naturally morphed into a mentor, into senior teacher, into these things. And so it's been such an organic process of how this body of work has developed. So I'm long answer for that, but that's how I came into it.
Yeah, no, and it's so lovely to hear. And I feel so many people are really even more so at this time asking questions of what makes a meaningful life and redefining what success looks like more and more so. So I think it's really important to share your story. And so how do you define success now from this place? What do you share with your son around that?
Yeah, so it's so beautiful because for me, success now is fulfillment. It's when I feel like I gave him my all today, and I can take off all the costumes and masks and things that are necessary to even go to the grocery store, and lay them down and go into the dream space to renew, wake up and feel like I am truly showing up for what I signed up to show up for here on this planet. And for me, that includes a full spectrum. So I'm not detached from the business world. I actually teach and collaborate in leadership programs for entrepreneurs and real estate brokers. However, what really makes it valuable is that I was them. I was that at one point. And so what I'm bringing in there is this other aspect of connecting to that higher calling or that higher intelligence and not necessarily profit only, right? And so for me, I say I'm wealthy. I'm so wealthy because I have cultivated and continue to cultivate my inner wealth before the outer wealth. And what I have found is that that's what births the outer wealth. You know, so it's not so much about you know, not caring about the outside or not caring about money or saying money is not important, because that's actually what we use at this time that we've been born into. However, it is not, it's not allowing those things to define you, not allowing those things to trap you or imprison you. And I feel that before that was me, I was trapped and imprisoned by this golden cage. And when it fell apart, I felt worthless because there was nothing that was showing me I was worth anything, because I had, you know, sourced that value from external things. So for me now, you know, I, with my son, obviously, you know, he's a boy, so it's different than a girl. There's an aspect of me as a woman that my son needs to hear from a man. However, I tell him, you know, you've got to have a strong backbone in the world, but an open heart. And that strong backbone is going to protect anything that, you know, that open heart needs to. So it's like a balance, you know, it's knowing how do we walk in the world and create, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to create new systems, create new visions, you know, bring in these new things, and also be sourced in something greater. And so it's like really bridging that inner world with the outer world, and not letting the outer world really consume us or overwhelm us, you know, or all these different things that then we go into hiding or we cut off from. So it's really, success to me is fulfillment, feeling the full spectrum of your being without, you know, being in the depths without drowning, you know, being in this world without forgetting who you are. So that to me is the greatest success.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And so womb work's the sort of core of what you do. So I'd love you to talk about what the womb means to you and why it's important. I'd love to start there.
So you're opening up these wormholes, right? So you
womb holes.
There's womb holes. You are familiar with the Jing Keys, and you mentioned the Venus sequence at the beginning of the call. And for me, the entire Venus sequence is womb work, you know, because that's the core of the transmission, right? Like where it's born out of. And so womb work is all about just the deeper feminine principles that support us, that are not valued, and that have been forgotten. And it's not necessarily about the womb in like the uterus organ, although that is part of the physiology of it, but it's beyond. It's the spiritual aspect of the womb, which is the birther of all creation. And so when we tap into womb consciousness, we're talking about the portals of taking something that is in spirit form and being able to print it out into the world. And so I call the womb the original 3D printer because, you know, it's taking something from the unseen and birthing it through our bodies. So it's not just a mental process. It's a body process that includes our whole being. You know, when we're in a, and I speak of like the example of having a baby, and you know, anyone who's a mother can really understand this, that we conceive, and then there's a process that happens, and we are in collaboration with some innate intelligence to create this baby, right? To weave this energetic into flesh. And so we don't wake up and think, oh, today I'm going to develop the hand or the fingerprint. These are things that there's a deep trust in the body that the body knows the timing for these things. And our job is to collaborate with that timing, support ourselves, eat healthy, do these things that allow this process to be efficient. And so I see that the same process for us to be living in this planet, to really birth life-affirming endeavors. And so that's why so womb consciousness is creating from the unseen into the seen, allowing also the seasonal aspect of our beings to inform our businesses, inform our own processes around things, and so when we're connected to that, it's almost like we become this extension of the earth that we are, right? And this interconnected intelligence awakens. And so now, we understand that, okay, not all my life is gonna be lived in spring. Not all my life is gonna be in summer. There's a necessary fall or autumn and a necessary winter. And if I know how to collaborate with that, then my work just organically, naturally grows. And there's going to be the aspects of shedding layers that are no longer aligned, that we've outgrown. And there's not no clinging, because we understand that, a tree in autumn, it doesn't cling to its leaves. It trusts that it's going to go through a process where it will be reborn again. And so that's a way to explain some of this womb consciousness, right? And then, of course, for me, which is huge, is that when, especially women, because I really believe that women are pillars in their home, pillars in society. We're incredible at taking care of our communities. This is a natural gift, and as nurturers. And when a woman reconnects to that and reconnects to her story, not history, but her story that has been, cut off, that has been forgotten, because of different agendas at play. But when we reconnect to that, we come to true empowerment. Not a false empowerment that rises out of the victimhood and kind of with that dynamic energy of like, oh, I am, I've got this, and I am a boss, and I am, and I can do anything men can do and even better. That may be necessary, as we understand, even with the Jinky work, right? Like, there's an aspect of the dynamic energy that rises to bring us out of these stories. But the cultivation of that is to, when we remember where we come from, when we remember our origins, and we begin to cultivate that into our daily lives, that's really where our true empowerment, because it's surrendered, it's in collaboration, it's interdependent. This is like our hive activated power. And it's also devotional. And I feel like I find this a lot with the Christian mystics. This is what they're speaking into, this ability to simply listen, be, and then become the hands and the body, the mouthpiece, the feet of the divine. What are we creating? And whatever we create, it's infused with that life-affirming endeavors that are so needed in our world right now. And so I can go on
Yeah,
forever.
wow. Go on. You give the voice of the womb, and I love what you share there as well, that what's created is life affirming. And that feels so important when there's so much created in the world, which is the opposite of life affirming. And so, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like that, even what we see in the world, right? Like, there's so much information, there's so much noise, but very few of it is really worth digesting, right? It's almost like you kind of right now have to listen below the noise and into the silence to truly find what is to truly gain discernment into what is truth, what is not, what serves us, what doesn't. Because it's like fast food, you know, we can eat fast food, but the nutrients are not there. And that's the same thing, I think, with creation. It's we are in the world that we are because we have placed value on things that are not regenerative. You know, they are about profit and it doesn't matter who gets in the way. And you know, there's so many of these different things that I think that even if it's such a like a small creation or a big creation or even our children, when we're able to really fill that with that essence of life affirming, is such a contribution to the world, is such a contribution to coming, you know, to returning to that interdependent beauty that any healthy ecosystem requires, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned about accessing through the womb the feminine principles, and you know, although you've touched on lots of those with the nurturing, interdependence, I'd love you to speak about what feminine means to you, because it's a word that's used and people have so many different understandings of what it means. So I'd love to hear your what comes from you with that.
Feminine for me means life, means beauty, and it also means menstruation and destruction. I feel that we view mostly, and what I see reflected back is that feminine is somehow this, you know, perfected goddess, floating, always, you know, soft and nurturing, and that is true because it is that, you know, sort of this Mother Mary essence, right? And the thing is that culture has space for that feminine. You know, culture likes that feminine, you know, the one that's quiet and can just do its job in silence and sacrificial, you know, ways. However, there's been a disconnect, and I like to always bring it back to the body, because it's almost like from the waist up, our feminine is allowed. You know, the heart, the mind, you know, this is something that is allowed in society and religion, in, you know, just in general. But the bottom of our bodies, from our waist down, has been shut down and has been vilified and has been made as, you know, I mean, just even thinking in religions, like Eve is responsible for all the bad in the world, right? Because she took this apple and this woman, and it's almost like when we speak of the feminine, it's a full spectrum being of embodiment of sexuality, of sensuality, because there are different things, right? And then also the nurturing. So it's really reconnecting our womb space, our sacral, and our heart and our mind. And I speak of this, it's almost like that sacred inner sacred marriage, inner sacred family. Because when we reinstate these centers, I in my work, the way I teach it is that our heart is to be here on the planet. It emanates, you know, there's an electromagnetic field. It creates coherence. Our mind creates systems, right? So if the heart is leading those systems, we can create beautiful things out here that nurture that. But what we often forget is that our power truly comes from our womb space, from our ability to birth, our ability to menstruate things, our ability to destroy what's not working, to let things go, right? And so when that, and that's when I feel we come into our authority in the feminine essence, is because we have the power, this volcanic aspect of us that's fertile. It wants to birth and it wants to destroy. And if we're able to move that energy, cultivate that, and also because within the womb is where we hold a lot of our ancestral anguish, our ancestral gifts, and our ancestral memories. And when we're able to do that work and then move that energy through the heart, it now softens that. It softens that because it becomes less about me and the past and my lineage, and more about the legacy and the interconnected community, the offerings that I can birth with this energy. And then it moves up into the mind, you know, and now it's, I can create the systems, the structures to hold this very powerful flow. And so I think that we're taught more the other way around. You know, it's like if you come up with the idea, you know, and then that idea makes you a lot of money or a lot of people want it, then you're going to have power. Then you're going to be wanted. Then you're going to be loved. Then you're going to have colleagues, you know, that care about you. Where in again, this is how I lived my first half of my life right now. And so now it's almost like I always say that the true ascension comes from the descent, being able to descend into the deepest parts of our beings to get in touch with that power that lives there, and then allow that to naturally rise through the intelligently designed filters that are available to us. You know, and I don't know if you're familiar with the 50th gene key of corruption, right? And harmony. And this is in my radiance sphere. So I love it because it's almost like we have to make the journey, the quest, you know, and I'll say that why I love beautifully crafted questions is because they send us on a journey. So it's not about the instant answer. It's like I love posing questions and then allowing life to take me on the quest, right? And so when we're able to journey and go on this quest into the deepest aspects of ourselves, it's like diving into the deepest well to retrieve those gold coins, you know, and then allowing ourselves to ascend back. And now we know what's at the core. We know what our values are. We know who we are. And then we don't allow the external to define that anymore, you know, and that's really, in my point of view, the only way that we can truly walk in the world in our authority without needing others to understand us, without needing others to validate us, because then it becomes about that communion with the divine. Am I in alignment with that greater intelligence, God, whatever feels alive for you? You know, am I in alignment with that? Am I in integrity with that? You know, so the questions really become more self-accountability, self-responsible, rather than, you know, if someone, you put out this beautiful thing you're excited about, and then someone is like, oh, what is that? And what about this? And give me facts, you know, and let's fact check this, you know, and you're really, you're like, amazing, you know, go at it. But I know that this is so true for me. And this comes from the place of gnosis, you know, that goes beyond what words could even explain, right? Because it's essence and words, you know, this is, there's a wonderful book. I don't know if you've heard of it or read it, but it's the language of the goddess, you know, and it talks about how language came in, you know, and sort of took us away from our senses, because we used to need to communicate with, you know, gestures and body and and sort of grunts and all these things that now it's like, oh, it has to be so perfectly articulated, you know, and how that really cuts off the essence of the feminine that is informing, right? And again, I love these words, right? Because it's informing, you know, it's just, it's formed inside and it makes its way out into the world.
Thank you. Wow. And so gosh, loads of places that I want to dive in with. First of all, I'd love to just say for people listening, because you use the term womb space, and for women listening that maybe don't have their physical womb, just to speak about how this relates.
I love that. Yes, thank you. And thank you for reminding me of that, because womb spaces are pelvic chalice. You know, it's not necessarily the organ, like I mentioned. So even women who have had hysterectomies, women who are not bleeding anymore, you know, all of these things, the essence, the matrix of that consciousness is still within our pelvic chalice. You know, and I love when science catches up to these things, right? Because it's what they call now phantom limb syndrome. Yep. You know, where you are still so you know, so some women will say, well, I don't have any traumas in my womb because I don't have one. I don't have a uterus, so I don't, and yet the pain's still there, you know, the imprints are still there. And so and the gifts are still there. So it's almost like it doesn't really matter. Yes, I think that the physical womb itself can express a lot. It speaks, you know, through cysts, endometriosis, you know, all of these different things that it expresses. However, the energetics, the imprint of that, it's still there. It's still there. So this womb wisdom is still available to all of us.
Thank you. And you mentioned about sort of what we hold in our wombs, anguish, ancestral trauma, these things. So for somebody listening, you know, how do you start to work with that if you have that there? How do you know that's there? I'd love to hear about that.
It's really cultivating a relationship. You know, it's sort of, and again, we're coming into these more feminine terms like courting, right? Because it's not an approach like, okay, womb, tell me what's there, I'm gonna fix it, you know? That doesn't work in that way. It's more creating that intention to connect and then developing a practice that it's almost like you start to court this womb space. And what will happen is that if you do this, and I wanna say that, you know, this is something that's been done for ages. You know, a lot of shamanic lineages understand this, and very few today, but there is this aspect of like the womb as a creator, because shamanic and indigenous lineages, you know, really are connected to nature, right? And so I would say to begin that relationship would be to start with your birth story. That's a very important one that I love, and it's not accessible to everyone, but birth story. Also, if you birth children, your pregnancy and your birth, there's a lot of clues that the body's constantly giving us, but because we don't know the language of it, we don't know how to interpret it, and we don't know when it's there. For example, when I gave birth to my son, if I would have known the language, it brought so much grief and so much memories that I had suppressed in my body, that when he was born, it really activated all that. And what I did without knowing it, it was, I kind of suppressed it back down. I said, well, that was weird. What was that? You know, and sort of kept on about my business. And Those birth stories are very powerful because when we are connected to that in that way, it's activating memories. It's activating, you know, those things. So that's a great way to begin to court it. The other is for women who are menstruating, you know, to allow those menstruation days to slow down, to care for your womb, you know, to be more in a slower pace, more contemplative space, right? And to start posing questions about your challenges. So what I find a lot is that we do not realize that most of our challenges, they're not our own. They're not our fault. They're not our, you know, even our own, they're activated by our experience, but the original imprinting was there before we came into this world. It was in the egg, you know, with our maternal, our grandmother. You know, we're born from eggs that were in our grandmother. So all those energetics are imprinted there. And so it's so beautiful to begin to see it that way, because then we understand that, okay, my depression is a call to go deeper into what has ancestrally been there. You know, perhaps it was my mother when I was in the womb. What was her experience of that? You know, or my grandmother when my mother was in my grandmother's womb. What was my experience of that? And so working with the womb is all about maternal line, because that's the energy that gets passed down. And not to get to you know, the scientific aspect of this, but the mitochondria, right, which is the energy of the cell, is only passed down through the maternal line.
Wow.
So when I found that out, I was wow, yeah. This is our light. Our mitochondria is our light, right? And so it's the energy of every cell, and that gets passed down. And you know, it doesn't take on the father's. Actually, the father surrenders it before it enters into the egg to fertilize the egg. And so we take on our mother's mitochondrial DNA. And so it's so fascinating when you begin to tie these things that I feel like sometimes, you know, I say we must make a return to thinking generationally, to acting generationally, because all these agendas and manipulations and all these, they're thinking generationally. You know, they're rolling out things generationally, and we kind of walk around in this little box that it's only my life, my problems, my story, right? But when we begin to, oh, this is also my mother's, this is also my grandmother's. And to some people that might sound like, I have enough with my own. I do not need to worry about my mother and my grandmother. But it's almost like, and again, it's that feminine essence of paradox, because at the same time, you open up to a greater context that allows you to be able to grow in consciousness bigger than whatever that little experience is when you're disconnected from that greater context, right? And so then, We kind of surrender questions like, why is this happening to me? You know, why am I do good? Why does that, you all, and it opens up the quest, right? And so for me, that's that aspect of, you know, and I'll say, because I said paradox, that's such an important part, because for me, anything that is true contains paradox. If it does not contain the paradox, it is probably not, you know, a life affirming truth.
Thank you. Wow. And you know, it's just incredible to, yeah, just blows my mind all the time, just contemplating that the egg that was me was in my grandma's womb. And just, you know, just that alone is just like utterly a miracle and mind blowing, isn't it? And so thank you for bringing in that sort of the generations and the lineages which we're working with. And that's so fascinating about the female mitochondria, and just incredible. So thank you.
You were talking about that there's a real difference between sexuality and sensuality. So I'd really love to hear your take on that. And also what sexuality looks like from the place of an embodied woman connected to her womb, because we see so many representations out in the culture of how sexuality should be. And I'd love to hear your take on what it looks like from that grounded, connected place.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. So for me, they are not the same thing. I feel like you can have sensuality includes sexuality, where sexuality could be without sensuality. And it almost feels like the sexuality piece, like you said, you know, we're taught what that is by what is projected out there of this is what a sexy woman is, this is how you should be, right? And so a lot of times we're educated by these aspects that it's simply about how to look sexual, or the things that these top three keys to, you know, having the best sexual experience or pleasing someone else or yourself, where I feel that sensuality really is when we reconnect to the matrix. Our innate sensual matrix is what connects us to everything. You know, it's sensuality is about being alive in your senses. So it's a lot more about presence, genuine presence, of being able to even become curious about what is my sexuality? What is that? What do I want to express that as, or what is moving through me, rather than, you know, kind of using the outside models of what sexuality is, or even other people's, you know, standards or guidebooks on it. And so when we are in our sensuality, it's eros, right? So it's like an inspired state of communing, you know. So it's also being connected to being in receptivity, you know, which I feel oftentimes could be missing from sexuality, where we want to please and we want to, you know, do these things we think we need to do. So we're more in our head than we really are in our bodily pleasure and sensation. And so for me, when we are in that sensuality, it's the way we don't have to be in a sexual exchange. We can be, it's the way we walk, it's the way we talk, it's the way we create, it's the way we savor our food, is the way that we are in constant flow with the external and our internal beings, but from this place of presence, of really, really being present for receptivity, to receive the moment. And in sexuality, it's beautiful. It's I feel that when you are first in that sensual place, then sexuality is a natural byproduct that just enhances the experience, whether with yourself or another or others, whatever that is. But because you are coming from a place that's connected to receptivity as well, you know, so you're actually more curious. And that's what I feel like sexuality in its pure essence, it's about being curious. You know, it's a curiosity of what is moving through me, what are the senses, what brings me alive, and then how do I share that with another human, you know, with another being. And so I often say we can be, you know, even sensuality is something that's actually really scary for a lot of people who have had sexual trauma, because they can deal with being sexual because it doesn't require full embodiment. It doesn't require me to be connected to my sexual centers even, but sensuality does, because sensuality is like the essence. It's the life force that's moving in my body. So if I am in a sensual state, I am present with what's happening in my body. That feeling sense is very alive. And if I am disconnected from that, I can still be a sexual being, you know, and sometimes even more so, because there's a hunger to feel, there's a hunger to, you know, there's like this longing for that sensuality, but we confuse that with, you know, the sexuality piece. And again, this is how we are culturally raised and taught and shamed and guilted, and, you know, in our own personal experiences around trauma with our bodies. So that's for me, is so important that when we are having that sexual conversation, that it does go deeper to what am I really here? Am I really present in this exchange? Am I really present in this way? And then your follow-up question with that, it's like, what does that look like? You know, it's for me, I can say that when I am in that space, what opens up through me is a greater presence. You know, when another being comes into my space and we are sharing in this experience, it's almost like communing with God, you know, like that. That's how I feel it. It's like you open up to, you surrender into that space, and the places in me that are not embodied, you know, kind of tend to show up and invite me deeper into that exploration. So I feel like that's the true deep medicine of our sex, of our, you know, of that expression, is that we can have access to a greater awareness because the intimacy is so deep and the transparency. Yet if we are not present for it, then it can just become, you know, just another encounter. And I think that this is kind of what makes casual sex so appealing, because it's like, oh, I get my needs met and I can just, you know, kind of move on. But when you are actually coming from that place of presence, it just takes you deeper into yourself. And I'm sure you know, I don't know if you've experienced this, but we've all heard of it, of, you know, this part of us that as a woman, when we are in that space of surrender, you know, and we orgasm from that place, you know, and then what comes up after, a lot of times it's like uncontrollable laughter or tears, you know. And I've had so many of my friends say, oh my gosh, I had to go to the bathroom and just cry my eyeballs out after it, and I don't know what happened. Well, what happened is that there was that presence, and it opened deeper to something that's there that also wants to be presenced, right? That also wants to be brought into union, into unity. And I think that's the most incredible experience of sharing that intimacy with another, is to really come to that place naked in all senses, you know, and allow that curiosity and that exploration to take us deeper into the womb of God or goddess.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm imagining, because I know this from my own history, and I know this from talking to clients, because we learn to do sex in a certain way, stepping out of performing and trusting in the curiosity and the not knowing can be so scary. So what words of wisdom would you share for someone who's listening, who's maybe like, well, how does that work? Or that feels too much.
Yeah, it's so important, right? I think that, you know, I always go for the gentle approach, you know, because it's I think it's the most integrative. So when there is that discomfort, and I have this that I learned from one of my teachers, Philip Shepherd, who is such a great teacher on presence, but he talks about when we are in presentation versus presence. And that has stayed with me as a gold nugget, because I can use that when I'm speaking in crowds. I can use that when I'm, you know, in that intimate space of, am I in what mode am I in? Am I in presentation or am I in presence? Because I can say for myself, when I'm in presentation, I'm, you know, concerned with things like, oh, do I look good right now? Or am I sucking in my, how do I look from that angle? Or, you know, like these different things that are all in my head. And like you said, it's more performative, right? It caters to that. But when I'm in presence, I am allowing myself to soften into what is. You know, so I'm actually allowing my body to soften more, my belly, instead of sucking it in and making it look, you know, as tight as possible. I'm relaxing it. I'm allowing, you know, I'm receiving, I'm in receptivity. And I feel that that's such a great exercise, because it can be, you know, it can be very subtle and it can be very overt as well. You know, so asking that, it's like, where am I in presence right now? Or am I in presentation? Because that's what that, you know, sexuality can be in presentation. It can have an amazing performance, you know, but I feel like even as there's this deep longing in women, you know, which ultimately is our longing to unite with the divine, with the beloved, as many Christian mystics, you know, have taught us through their writings. But that opportunity to have that exchange, it's almost like it brings it into the space. And if we allow ourselves to soften, to receive, to inquire, can I allow myself, can I give myself permission to just be a little bit more present, be a little bit softer, you know? And when something becomes really uncomfortable, can I also love myself to say, okay, let's take a breath. Maybe I don't have to go that fast. But now I know there's something there. And can I get curious about it? What am I holding there? You know, as women, you know, and bringing this to the womb, you know, we carry so much within our womb. So many experiences that we were not able to digest, or even lineage experiences that were not digested, we carry them in the womb. And so that's a place that, when it becomes alive and you become curious, it has so many stories to share and so much gold and so much ability to relax into our beings and to let go of so many images that have been imprinted on us as to what a woman should be, or you know, whether in the bedroom or in the boardroom, right? It's like we allow ourselves to explore, who am I really without all these stories and imprints, and what do I need to embody in order to receive the fullness of life? Because as women, we are not, you know, I feel like oftentimes there's like this reductionist approach to what is a woman, or what, you know, what is feminine, but we are a multiplicity of things, you know, we are. That's why archetypes are so helpful. You know, even speaking of the jinkies, right? This is why the archetypes help us, because they give us it's almost like the same information, but through a different lens. And so we're able to explore that full spectrum of our beings through these different avenues, where when we are take this reductionist approach of, you know, we end up in boxes. We end up in like, this is the list, you know, check off this list and now you're a woman, or you're in your feminine, or too much masculine, whatever that is. But I feel the true incredible gift of the feminine is that the feminine will always carry greater mystery than known. So it's mm-hmm. almost like being able to embody to some degree that you will never truly know your own feminine, because that's the whole point, that there is the it's it's the womb of the mystery, you know? And so, yeah, I went off on a different tangent, but that's...
No, I really loved what you brought in there, that because I think it's so important to hear, because there's so much on the internet of if you're feminine, this will happen, and this is how the feminine should look, and so much of it is dressed up and can feel really appealing when you're not sure what you should be doing, or when you don't trust yourself. And I know I've spent many years looking or trying these things on, and so I feel, just to share that we are so multi-dimensional, and there's so much of us that we'll never even know ourselves is and actually the journey is our inner explorations into what that means for us. That's the only real journey that we can go on. And I just, in my world, and I'm hearing that from you, is so important, I feel, to hear.
Yes, absolutely. And because we're all, you know, again, we're all so unique, you know, we're alike in many ways, but just like our fingerprints, you know, we're all human, but we all have this unique soul print that only we can activate, right? Only we can seek to others for guidance. We can, you know, use other people's work to explore that. But ultimately it is about, it's the inner journey of who really am I, you know, what moves me, what doesn't, you know. And I often say that we are all, we're each a different color thread in this great tapestry, you know, so we're all needed for the greater picture to come alive. But if we are not in our own thread and color, you know, it's almost like we can end up all looking the same and not really be able to create what truly is our birthright, right? So it's a journey of just curiosity and presence, and nature is such a great teacher. I feel like the greatest teacher of all, because we can learn so much even from like biomimicry, you know, seeing how the systems work, and we're an extension of that, and asking, how does that work in me, you know, how do I respond to these things? And so, yeah.
Beautiful. And you were saying earlier about that sort of journey down and into the body, that journey of descent. And, you know, I again, my story, and I work with many women around this, just that sense of not feeling they're able to trust themselves, or they are maybe scared of their power because they've had that put down, or they hide it. So I'd love to hear any, you know, final words of wisdom for women out there. And I know you work around, you talk about feminine leadership as well, and so, yeah, I'd just love you to speak to that.
Yeah, so important, so important, especially in these times. You know, there's a lot of confusing information out there, just like you said, you know, for like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing if I want to be feminine, or this is what I'm supposed to, you know, and again, it does come down to that journey of descent is a journey of unlearning and learning at the same time, right? And I would say it's like more remembering. We are remembering what has been dismembered from our feminine psyche. And so we have, you know, there's layers to this. There's a cultural perspective. There's this patriarchal reality that we have existed under for the last 4,000 years, at least. And also there's, you know, even history before that. And I always say that it's so important for a woman to know her story, you know, to surrender history and to learn her story. And that's only going to happen through descent. That's only going to happen through going inwards and asking those questions of, you know, why does this scare me? Because we always start with the why, right? And then at some point we surrender the why and we allow the journey to kind of come alive. But in these times, I feel, and I don't know if you noticed this, but when I started doing consciously working on myself about 12, 13 years ago, nobody was really talking about a lot of these things. You know, it was more like I had to go and dig for my shadow, and I had to, you know, go hunting and almost stalking them to get to know them, you know. But now it's here, it's everywhere, you know, everywhere we look around, there's shadow. And so important to acknowledge what that shadow aspect of ourselves is. What is that aspect that's trying to sabotage us? What is that aspect that says, no, you cannot speak? No, you are not big enough. No, you need to get back in your place. What is that that we have internalized and is now our oppressor? Right? Because until we get to know that aspect of ourselves, we don't have enough power within to be able to transmute that into permission. And so what we'll do is we'll instead externalize it to the medical system, to the, you know, to the spiritual leader, to the whatever it is. But it's almost like we begin this externalization of authority, because we are not in our seat of power. And the only way to really reinstate that seat of power is to come into the body, you know, to learn the body. So many times it's through symptoms. The body's already showing something. And I love this symptom approach, because it's almost like you get a thread and you follow it all the way down to the root. And when we are already in a symptom or in our body's expressing something, this has already become manifest into the 3D world. But it began as an energetic imprint, right? And so what we want to do is now we can take that, for example, cysts or endometriosis or ovarian, you know, just symptoms that we have. We can actually use those as doorways to enter that inquiry. You know, to sit, and I often have my clients do this, is, you know, to speak to that cyst, to speak to that endometriosis, and to have tea, you know, and sit and get curious. What message are you bringing me? You know, what can the body not carry anymore that now it's expressing in this way? And it's saying, hey, listen to me, I'm here. I'm not going away, and I'm not going to be quiet anymore. You know, so it's almost like this, it's not an overnight thing. And I think a lot of times this is why my work isn't that popular, is because we can't fix it. You know, we can't just take a course one weekend or, you know, that and say, oh, now I figured it out. This is a lifelong journey. And I think that's the beauty of apprenticing to life, is that you realize that there is nowhere to get to. You know, because the moment you get there, the moment you get that thing that you think is going to fix everything, you're going to realize that there's another thing now that you need, you know. And so there's this aspect of learning to be present with what is in that moment and trusting that that's leading, that unfolding of your own timing, of your own soul print, of your own thread. And that's challenging, because a lot of times we know what we need to do to align, but we're not willing to let go of what we need to give up in order for that to happen. And so I think that's where so much 90% of the work, you know, is in, can I let go of what I need to in order to, you know, for that to evolve, to transmute. Yeah, we have so many oppressive imprints, and again, it's in so many levels. It can even be lineage. You know, I come from a lineage of women who didn't have a voice and were very suppressed and were very, you know, sacrificial, and this was celebrated. And so it's almost like sometimes I feel like all these women are inside of me, and you know, it's both. You know, it's one of those paradoxical things where it's both the curse and the blessing, because sometimes it feels like a lot, like, can I just live my life? But at the same time, it's like, well, living that life is expressing what wants to move through me, right? So I feel like women, is one of those things like we cannot not do ancestral work when we're doing our work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you shared then as well about apprenticing to life and that commitment to life. And beautiful. And I'd love to I feel it's important before I've got a couple of wrap up questions for you, but I would just love you to share briefly what the gene keys are, because we've spoken about them a few times and not everybody listening will have heard of them. So I'd just love you to share a little bit about that from your perspective.
Yes, I love the gene keys, you know, on my journey, they have been so important, because when we're speaking of the feminine journey, you know, this awakening, the feminine journey, like it's very nonlinear, you know, it's chaotic. It's all of the things that don't seem to have a structure or burn down structures. And when I came to the gene keys, what it allowed me to do was have a vehicle that allowed me to move through my healing journey in a way where I had, sort of these posts or this structure that allowed that energy to move more efficiently. And I often say, you know, I used to say that the gene keys would be kind of the masculine perspective, and then my other journey would be like the feminine, right? And so they needed each other to kind of make it an efficient journey. But now what I have come to find is that there is a very beautiful structure in the feminine. You know, there's the structural feminine that is cut off, but I feel that the structures that the feminine create are actually structures that are meant to mutate, that understand that they are not, that there will be change. They are made for change. And so for me now, the way I see the gene keys is more of that structural feminine, in the sense that it's not a set of rules. It's rather these archetypes for contemplation, right? And so there's different spheres on there, but because it's an alive transmission that Richard Rudd has brought forward, because it's an alive transmission, it almost meets you where you are and it evolves with you, you know? And I don't know if this has happened to you, Sarah, but for me, it was almost like I would read it. And at the beginning, I would read it and just try to memorize it. And, you know, all these things like, okay, I know my gift and I know my shadow and, you know, and that. And then I would go back 3 months later and I completely saw something new. It was like, wait, this was here this whole time, right? So, and I've been with the gene keys now maybe about 8-9 years. And every time that I sit and I read one of those archetypes, it reveals something new and fresh to me. But that's because it's evolving, you know, it's alive, it's moving. And so the gene keys, what it is, it's a transmission that is alive, that, you know, that allows us to explore 64 archetypes that are in our being. And then depending on your birth date and those things, where are those archetypes mostly amplified? Because you know, we get our kind of primary gene keys, but then we really have all of them. It's just that there's more of an emphasis on some. And it's a wonderful way to explore a lot of those questions of who am I? Why am I here? Why do I struggle with relationships? Why, you know, like that, it's very tempting and very it's very tempting for the question why. So I feel like it gives you that food that the mind needs, but then it takes you deeper into exploring, okay, so, you know, and each of those gene keys has its shadow, has its gift, and has its city, which is the divine gift, right? And most of us are living between shadow and gift, right? We're kind of having this dance. And then if we're, you know, lucky enough, we get to taste that city every now and then. But it's a contemplative path. And I feel like it works very well with any kind of other work that we're doing, because it sort of brings in this aspect of the contemplative mind, you know, that those things that we don't make time for. And I often like to just choose a key and go on a long walk and have it meet me, you know, have it. It, because again, they come alive. Anything for me, anything that I contemplate, I just start seeing it everywhere, right? It's kind of like that reticular activator thing that we have in our brains. But you start to see it, and it starts to give you feedback, and it starts to give you invitations, and it starts to show you. And the most important thing that I feel that Jinkies is so genius with, it allows us to take responsibility for ourselves. You know, because ultimately, you know, this is why I love depth psychology as well, Jungian's work. And it's because the invitation is to take responsibility for our journey in a way that then that's how we take our power back. Because as long as we're externalizing blame, as long as we're externalizing things, and not to say that isn't real, because absolutely, you know, and as women, boundaries is so huge for us. But it allows us to kind of take back, like, okay, that happened, and I can be with that experience. And also, what did that experience come to teach me about what's living inside of me? Because I do feel that so many of us have these inner wars happening, you know, these inner splits. But we like the good ones. We like the ones that feel good and give us excuses to remain where we are. And we tend to externalize the not so good ones, you know, and this is relationship, why it's such a great teacher, because then we have aspects of us looking back at us and saying, I am alive in you too. And if we can really take that invitation, you know, and of course this takes courage. This is why it's not for the faint of heart, right? But if we can be courageous to sit with that question, I feel like that's where we are revealed how we give away our power, because we don't have the bandwidth to be with the very difficult inquiries, you know, that maybe we're not so good after all, you know, maybe we're not the victim all the time. Like, there's a villain and an oppressor that lives inside of us as well. And with that, can we reconcile those aspects? And ultimately, this is the inner marriage, you know, that so many lineages speak of bringing those inner splits into harmony in our beings.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing and taking us on a little journey with the Gene Keys. And I'd love to finish with asking people something about the future. So I'd love to hear, like, what's your vision for the world?
Oh, I love this. So, you know, one of the things is, for me, I think of generationally. So I have made peace that I may not see this, you know, come into fruition in my lifetime. And that does not relieve me of what I am here to do and to be and to transmit. But for me, when I see a woman move into her inner authority, have a conversation with her body where she's not just listening to her body, but through her body, that just brings me alive, because I feel that woman is the pillar of society, the pillar of her home. And when a woman is healthy, when a woman is in her seat of power, she naturally overflows, you know. And so I feel that this is why this has been the agenda for so long, to keep the woman disconnected, you know, and as a second class citizen, where we are the birthers of life. And there's nothing externally that reflects that back to us. So it's our job to reflect that to each other and to invite each other into that. And when we value that, we're going to embody that and we're going to lead by example, you know, and it's going to start in our homes. And I feel that that's the most important sacred work of all, because when we begin to model this, what children come out of those homes, are they're going to grow up to be men. They're going to grow up to, you know, have positions in society. And I feel that very different decisions could be made. And so for me, it's like that the ideal vision of this is woman coming into her inner union and birthing all of her gifts from that space of just life affirming values and being a blessing. You know, I always say, you be the blessing wherever you are. You know, don't wait to be blessed. You be the blessing. You be the pillar. You be the one that brings that energy, because we are so powerful in our energy and in how we imprint spaces, but we don't know that because we've forgotten. And so this is part of that remembering. You know, it's not just so that we're this, it's all about me, self-love, just me. You know, ultimately all great journeys take us away so that we can come back and give the collective our gifts and share what we have found along this journey, which is why the journey isn't going to be the easiest, because it's really asking us to alchemize that lead into gold. You know, bring back the gold to your communities, to the collective, and yeah, just that's a big vision. But I know it, even as I'm saying it, it's like my body, every cell is like, yes. And will this be, you know, possible? I don't know, but I have already, excites me, and I'm so excited about, I'm already seeing that. You know, I've already met women like this, you know, and we're all, again, we're working on it. And the more of us, there's power in numbers, you know, there's that collective, that hive, you know, that teamwork. And again, with women, we have so many things that divide us, but that's all superficial agendas. You know, when we really drop into our womanness and to that divinity, that goddess that resides in each of us, we begin to collaborate, you know, we begin to cross-pollinate our, you know, for example, Sarah, it's like right now for me, I'm meeting your lineage, you know, it's like Annabelle's lineage from Mexico, Spain, you know, it's like they're all here with me. And they're meeting you, and you're, and you know, and I'm meeting you and your lineage, and we're coming together and we're having this conversation that is bringing and weaving together something that was not there yet, you know. And again, it's not about, oh, are you more powerful or am I, or are you this, that falls away, because ultimately our womb voice is that deeper invitation to unity, you know, and so yes, unity in the world.
Thank you. And big visions, you know, I love that you shared this is a big vision, but the world needs big visions, and yes. I can see your vision happening already. And so, yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And thank you for your womb wisdom and all that you brought to this conversation. I know people are going to love listening to it. And where can people find you online? I will put your links in the show notes, but just if you could share with people the best places, that would be beautiful.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for this conversation, this invitation, and your generosity. So I'm mostly active on Instagram. So find me there. And, you know, I have a website and that stuff, but mostly on Instagram is kind of my, where I'm like daily, you know, posting things or sharing things, and where I love to connect with others as well. So thank you.
Beautiful. And then people can find out about your work on your website.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you for listening to the Love, Sex and Intimacy podcast with me, Sarah Rose Bright. I support women and couples across the globe to truly enjoy sex and pleasure and to create or deepen intimate relationships that are passionate and purposeful, happy and healthy, and I'd love to support you. You can book a complimentary call via my website at saraherosebright.com to find out if my approach is right for you. And check out my website for information about my one-to-one coaching programs and any current workshops, group programs, and retreats that I'm running. Wherever and whenever you are listening, wishing you a beautiful day.